At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Beto O'Rourke says he's raised more than $6.7 million in the first 3 months this year in his Senate campaign. The Democratic congressman from El Paso says he received donations from more than 140,000 contributors during the first quarter. Republican Senator Ted Cruz has not released his latest fundraising figures, but he has maintained a lead in overall cash on hand. Sean Theriault is a government professor at UT Austin. He talked with Texas Standard host David Brown about what today's big numbers mean for O'Rourke's chances in the November election.
How significant do you read this, that he's managed to put together a war chest like, what, $6 million is what's being reported now?
Sure, you'd certainly rather be in a position where you're raising a lot of money, like Beto is. And perhaps even more important is that he's getting that from lots of different sources, and a lot of those sources are in Texas. So there's no doubt that those are all really good signs. But what that does is it's just setting up a race that could become competitive. Certainly if he wasn't able to raise money, that would be a very bad sign for him, being in a state of Texas and running against an incumbent. But to the extent that he's developing a bit of a war chest, and it seems like it has some Texas roots, that's certainly going to bode well, but by no means does that mean that this race is his.
Now, you've mentioned that there are some Texas roots here, but also some of this money is coming in from out of state. How significant is that, and what is the significance, would you say?
So certainly Texas dollars are better for him than California dollars or New York dollars. But I mean, at the end of the day, a dollar is a dollar. And so the extent that those dollars coming in from other states are certainly going to help him bottom line. They're certainly going to give him a louder microphone from which he can speak during the general election. And so he'll take the money wherever he can get it. But to the extent that he does have some Texas roots indicates that at least there's some popularity to his campaign.
Why does it matter? Why are the newspapers and the political journals talking about this as one of their top stories today? Where does this money have an impact?
What we're looking at are some early signs to indicate that this race is going to be as competitive as the O'Rourke people are telling it is. And at this point, we really can't trust the polling. It's way early, and polls are pretty expensive. So we just get these little snapshots of data that suggest that there's something might be happening here. Mm-hmm. And so to the extent that money is one of those things that has to be regularly reported, then it becomes one of these touchstones that we can all check in on over the course of a campaign to see if the feel that we get from the campaign actually shows some evidence in the data that we collect.
What do you read? What's your takeaway, the significance of this story that Beto O'Rourke now has a war chest of $6.7 million?
Let's start from the premise that if he didn't have as big a war chest, or he wasn't doing a good job at raising money, then I think that we would default into the story that this is a Republican state, an incumbent that's pretty popular. But to the extent that he is raising money indicates that this could become a competitive race. But a lot of things are going to have to break his way over the course of the campaign. So what the war chest tells us, the money war chest, is that there's enough for us to keep talking about this story. There's no reason we shouldn't be covering this as a potentially competitive race.
That was UT Austin Professor Sean Theriault talking with Texas Standard host David Brown. If you happen to be outside in the city right now, the first things you might notice, skyscrapers, streets, and sidewalks. But look closer, and you'll notice wildlife is everywhere. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with Minnow Skilthausen about how growing cities are changing the Earth's biodiversity.
Cities have become richer, at least in plant life, whereas agricultural areas have become poorer. And the latter has to do with the intensified agricultural practice. People nowadays are trying to get as much agricultural production out of every square meter of agricultural land, so you don't find the small-scale habitats anymore. It's very large fields. The rivers and brooks are being normalized into very straight canals. There's very little space left for trees and bushes, etc. And at the same time, cities are becoming biologically more interesting. People are they're building gardens with different kinds of plants. You see that there are green spaces are being optimized, and little parks are being created, green roofs and green walls. So in the cities, actually, there's habitats being created for animals and plants, and at the same time, outside of the city, they're disappearing. So I think that's the reason why you see that biodiversity in cities is going up, and outside of cities, it's going down.
I know Skilthausen is the author of Darwin Comes to Town, How the Urban Jungle Drives Evolution. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. Every week, KERA's One Crisis Away project looks at life on the financial edge. Whether it's cashing a check, wiring cash to a friend, or trying to borrow money, people living in poverty have a different experience than those on sound financial footing. As Courtney Collins reports, one North Texas nonprofit aims to close that gap by giving those with financial means a taste of life without.
Catholic Charities Fort Worth hosted the workshop, which on its face has a simple mission. It's called FinX, short for financial experience, and it's designed to show working professionals, people from nonprofits, banks, law firms, how the other half lives. Instead of watching a documentary or listening to a lecture, though, these 40 workshop attendees take to the streets. Their goal? Cash a couple of provided checks, complete a dozen tasks, and come away with an understanding of the challenges many people are up against. And speaking of challenges, for this simulation, nobody has a bank account, social security number, or a car.
It's a beautiful day for walking.
Most of the groups are using Uber to get around. The people on this team, Kimberly Lawrence, Neil Shields, and Al Como, are doing the whole simulation on foot. They can't do much without money, so they walk a few blocks to the nearest Chase Bank to cash a $70 payroll check. Since the checks were issued from a Chase account, they figured they can cash them there for free. Al Como says that didn't turn out to be the case.
Kimberly was able to write the check over to Neil. Neil deposited it into his account, and we got all of the money out. So otherwise, we would have had an $8 fee on a $70 check.
If a team member hadn't been a Chase Bank customer in real life, they would have been out $8. So now that they've got cash in hand, they still have a dozen other tasks to get to.
Groceries, snacks, inquiring about sending money to Mexico.
They also have to ask about taking out a cash loan. They need to buy a reloadable prepaid card and pick up a money order. They hit a snag on that one. Como and Lawrence explain.
We needed a money order. We ended up getting two because we made a mistake.
Well, in having made that mistake, it cost us another dollar because we got it for $10 and then realized it was supposed to be $20, and so we had to pay another 99 cents to get it.
And those are the little frustrations the folks on this team felt the whole day. Their prepaid card came with a $6 fee attached, plus another fee to run a transaction. And they were startled by what it cost to rent a mattress by the week, another task on the list.
Twin mattress costs $453, which I think is pretty expensive. But if you pay the minimum payments, you're going to actually end up paying $755.
The folks on this team say it was a taxing couple of hours. And it was even tougher because they weren't just zipping all over Fort Worth in their cars.
We're not in a city center, right? So if you're living in a city center, walking around is not that big of a deal. Because we're in more of a sprawled out area, walking is taking a lot of our time, too.
This poverty simulation had a hard deadline, too, so this team wasn't able to tick off every item on the list. They ran out of time before they were able to buy diapers and wipes. They were supposed to visit a pawn shop, and they couldn't reload their prepaid card. Teresa Schmall is with the Center for Financial Services Innovation, which puts on FinX. She says for the people who attend these events, falling short is a great way to learn.
We have anyone from regulators to bankers to credit union providers to nonprofits participate in these to really better understand the folks that they're trying to help.
And part of understanding people means checking biases at the door. Biases against places like check cashers.
Or to realize that they're not inherently bad. A lot of times people go to a check casher because it's someone in their community who knows them, and they walk in and they're greeted by their first name. They know exactly what fee to expect. It's super transparent. They're never surprised. It's a very different experience than you might expect if you've not personally gone through it.
A lot of people never will go through that. 40 people in Fort Worth can now say they have. Courtney Collins, KERA News.
Partly cloudy skies in store for us later tonight. Should be a low around 41 this evening. Tomorrow, sunny with the high near 64. And tomorrow night, mostly clear, low around 47. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.